This episode marks another milestone in the podcast history. I'm getting a lot of those lately, but today I'm interviewing two people instead of one. And I was a little nervous about it, to be honest, but it worked out well. They have done several interviews. They have co-authored a book together called Beyond Ever After. And it's a fascinating story. So I have with me Catherine Weisenberg and Jocelyn Montanaro. The story is about Jocelyn and Kevin, and Jocelyn losing Kevin, her husband, her love of her life, to brain cancer. In 3.5 years, she saw him go from a perfectly healthy person to comatose to dying. And Catherine enters the picture when Kevin is in a coma. Kevin had surgery to remove the tumor, and that was after a recurrence of the brain cancer. And it went wrong, and as they had not predicted it would go. Obviously, with brain surgery, you never know what's going to happen, but they thought he had another year after the surgery, and he had complications as a result of the surgery and went into a coma. And if you can imagine the love of your life and the father of your two children being going from perfectly fine, well, not perfectly fine, but thinking things would be okay after surgery, and in a matter of hours, having somebody bedridden and hospitalized, and life changes immediately. So Catherine is somebody who has a gift, and her gift is she is able to connect people who are either comatose, can't really speak to anybody like in the normal world, and people who are have passed on. And she has this ability to connect into the other world, and she does what's called a reading. And she is able to, in a way, bring that person to life and allow them to communicate with their loved ones. So Jocelyn, and this is a great story, and what's so great about it is Jocelyn thought it was like hocus pocus. I mean, her sister introduced her to Catherine. And so for a long time, from the beginning of Kevin's diagnosis, she tried to get them to talk and to connect, but Jocelyn would not. She didn't believe in it, and she thought it was crazy. So she went on with her life, and about 26 days after Kevin was in his coma and she was at her wit's end, her sister reached out and said, "You really need to talk to Catherine." And so she finally did. And this is a story of several readings that Catherine did. The book actually covers several readings that Catherine did before Kevin, while he was in a coma and before he actually died. And she has done readings since his death. But it is absolutely fascinating. And if you think it's hocus pocus, I hope you just come to this episode, open your mind, and just listen. I started really getting fascinated with this stuff about 1.5 years ago when I read another book. And so I really believe, you know, that our spirits, you know, my dad died a few years ago, and I believe he's here with me. And I think they are always trying to communicate with us, but obviously a lot of us just are really closed off to that. And we are so busy, me included, living our lives and in the conscious world. And so this is a really fascinating story, and I think it will give many people hope that, number one, not a fear of death anymore, because you're eternal. And number two, I think when people go through these tragedies, books like this can really help them. And so I think it would be a great gift for somebody who has either had somebody pass and is devastated by it, as we all are when somebody who we love dies. And if somebody's going through the pain of some, you know, life-ending illness, it is a story of tragedy, of course, but hope. And you'll hear from Jocelyn and how her life was changed by Catherine, and it made Kevin's passing so much more peaceful, because even though he wasn't communicating directly with her, she was hearing from him. So I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm just going to let you listen to them and hear the story. And I hope you go to Amazon.com and buy the book. I went and bought 2 copies for my daughters when I finished the episode, because I wanted them to read it. And I think the younger you are when you hear this stuff, and it makes life I think just you don't live in fear of death anymore. And that's happened to me since a year and a half ago when I read that book that I read, and I've spoken about it before on the podcast. It really makes you feel like, you know, there's more after this physical life and this human life we're living. So let's get on with the episode and I will stop talking. Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today I am doing another first. I have two people on this interview and they come together as a package. And I'm really excited to have them here. They wrote a book together about an experience, or I guess a few experiences all bundled together. The book is Beyond Ever After, a heart-to-heart journey through death and the afterlife. So I have the co-authors here with me, Catherine Weisenberg and Jocelyn Montanaro. I have not finished the book, but I got it. I'm a slow reader, so I'm like, and I'm so fascinating. And so I got like halfway through it, and then I started like trying to speed read it. So I can't wait to actually, I'm going to order a few copies because I want to give one each to my kids because it's such a fascinating topic. But I'm going to go ahead and let Catherine, why don't you go first and introduce yourself, and then Jocelyn, and then we can kind of talk about, I know you've done interviews with lots of interviews about your book. So I'm going to let you kind of lead this. So Catherine, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay. Well, thanks for having us, Lori. My name's Catherine Weisenberg, and I have an unusual skill set in that for 30 years, I've been facilitating conversations with deceased people, people in comas, and God. So as strange as that might sound, and very off the grid until the books come out, and now everybody knows the big secret's out. So I worked quietly helping people. And our book, Beyond Ever After, is really the story of Jocelyn's husband, who was diagnosed with brain cancer, had a surgery, had a removal of that tumor, had a reoccurrence, and was going into surgery another time, and had the surgery go wrong, she can tell you, and he fell into a coma. And that's when I actually came into Jocelyn's life, so to speak, Kevin and Jocelyn's life. And that's kind of where the book begins, and used my gift to help them through this journey, this heart-to-heart journey through death and the afterlife. So Jocelyn, you want to take it from there?
And before Jocelyn starts, just so people have an idea of time frame, so Kevin was first diagnosed in 2009, if I'm correct, right? And then had a reoccurrence in 2013. So in terms of timing, just so people know how long ago it was. Okay, Jocelyn.
Well, as Catherine said, my husband was in a coma following surgery to remove a brain tumor. And what happened is in the recovery room, an artery tore in his head. And so it all went downhill from there. And he had just one, you know, problem after another. And my sister, Vicky, had many writings with Catherine's over the years. They were friends. And she kept encouraging me to have a writing with Catherine. And I didn't want to do it. I didn't believe that Catherine had this gift. It sounded like a bunch of hogwash. And honestly, I thought that it was, you know, it was not really, didn't think highly of Catherine. I thought she kind of preyed on people in vulnerable times. You know, I didn't know anything about it. And like most people, when you don't know something about something, you tend to just dismiss it.
Put your own perspectives on it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, I'm always right about everything. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. And she's a lawyer. So.
So anyway, but after a month in a coma, I was really just kind of all out of options. And I thought, you know, what have I got to lose? My sister kept encouraging me to do it. And then she said, well, you know, if you don't want to do a writing is what they're called, because Catherine writes down the information she receives, she can just pray with you. And I was like, are you kidding? I mean, I've been praying. I wasn't religious at all. But of course, when something like this happens to you, what's the first thing you do? You start praying, you know, so I'm praying. And he's just getting worse and worse and worse. And so now, of course, I'm mad. I'm praying. I'm not getting what I want. I'm really mad. It wasn't going well.
Well, so, it's funny because you seem, when I could see myself in you when I was reading it, because the way it was described in the book is you're not really a religious person, and neither am I. And sometimes, and I've had some actually bad experiences with people who are overly religious and pushy. And so it's like, I don't even like saying God. And so yeah. I like how Catherine in the book, in the very beginning, in fact, says like, you can use whatever, insert whatever, but because Kevin believed in God and he was Catholic upbringing, she used God when she was talking to him. And I thought that was really fascinating, but you tend to reach out in those instances when you were at your wit's end with mm-hmm. what he was going through and not being able to do anything. And then that's when you kind of faith does come in, when maybe you're not a religious person. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting and how you guys were very different like that. You and Kevin.
Well, a lot of people are really religious, and Kevin was very religious, and, you know, he was good at it. And I just figured, when you're in this situation and the person you love more than anything in the world is just failing before your eyes, and there's this all-powerful source that you've heard of course, and know about, who can fix it, and they're not, and you're asking really nicely and it's not happening and things are just getting worse. You, at least for me, I was pretty unhappy and mad about everything.
Yeah. And what was so sad to me is that here you were on a vacation when on the last day of your vacation, and you were saying what a beautiful life and how thankful you were. And as you're about to go for your last snorkel of the vacation, and then he has this seizure, and then your life changed forever that day. It's like, that's heart-wrenching. And then the fact you can tell, you know, what a love story you all had, and that, you know, and two boys, and it just, your whole life changed. Doesn't matter. I mean, I guess did have some, when you go into remission, he did have a period, but the diagnosis was not good. So you kind of knew you were on a short fuse there.
You know, we did. And in fact, after the first surgery, I kept saying, well, how long is he going to live? And the doctor would say, well, you know, he could walk out here and get hit by a bus. I don't know how long he's going to live. I'm like, okay, well, absent the bus scenario, you know, just if the normal progression of the disease, you know, they don't like to give you an answer to that. And he said he had a 50-50 chance of making it to 5 years. And of course, I looked online and read everything I could every day looking for new information. And all the websites I read said 3.5 years. And it was literally 3.5 years almost to the day when we went back for a scan that it came back. So,
yeah. And I was surprised that you were going every 2 months to get a scan. It's an aggressive cancer, I guess, for the fact that in 2 months it grew like it did, and he had nothing. And then all of a sudden at the 3.5 year mark, he had another sizable tumor.
Yeah, that's primary brain cancer always comes back, always. So the like it says in the book, the longer you go cancer free, the shorter time you have until you're not cancer free. But anyway, so I was, you know, doing all asking God and not getting anything. And so Catherine comes into the picture, and we're doing this first writing over the phone. My sister sets it up. Catherine's in Washington on a vacation with her own family. And she starts writing. I hear her writing. And then she says she hears a man's voice. And as you know, you've read the book, this part so far. And I say, who is it? And she says, it's, you know, Kevin. Or Kevin says, you know, it's me. And I ask.
And is she like, when Kevin speaks to her, is she like talking? She's speaking his words to you? Is that how it works?
Catherine, you want to talk about how that works?
For what I do is, it's not like I'm hearing him. It's like energy. And the reason I write it down is there's so much material. It's not like I'm completely fully present, so it doesn't seem woo-woo-y, as Jocelyn can tell you. It's just like we're talking now. So I relay that. And of course, it's not like I'm channeling Kevin and I sound like him or anything weird like that. But Jocelyn can tell you the phrases, the intonations, everything is that person. So what I do is, like, when we were on the phone, when I would write, then I would reread, and then it started working like a conversation back and forth. But Jocelyn, being the good attorney and skeptic she was, she asked him a test question. So maybe you want to share that part, Jocelyn.
Thank you. Yes. So when Catherine started writing, and all the writings always have this God introduction, which for me in the beginning was very short, because, and they've gotten longer because I never really cared about the God part. I just wanted to talk to Kevin. Although for Catherine, I see her shaking her head. Most people really just want to talk to God. I really just ever wanted to talk to Kevin. But anyway, so he chimes in and says, it's me, he's there. And I said, well, what's the last thing you remember? Because he asked me how the kids were and he used their names. And I thought, my sister Vicky could have told Catherine my kids' names. You know, she could have known those general things about me. And I'm a pretty suspicious person. Well, I used to be more suspicious. Stop, Catherine's like laughing. Our eyeballs are rolling in her head. Anyway. So I asked him, what's the last thing you remember? And he told me something so specific, I knew it had to be him. And that was that as he was getting wheeled into the surgery, he remembered reaching up and taking Linda, that's the surgeon's name, hand, and telling her, thank you for doing this, Linda. And after the surgery, you know how the surgeon always comes out and tells you how it goes to the family. Well, she came out and she said, you know, everything went fine, but before I get in the details, I just got to tell you, you know, your husband's the nicest man. As we're wheeling him in, he reaches up and grabs my hand and says, you know, thank you for doing this, Linda. And the only people that heard it were me and my two kids. And 20 minutes later, the artery tore in his head in the recovery room and everything went downhill from there. I never repeated it to anyone. I never even thought about it again. Something so typical of something he would say, but when your life just goes into crisis mode, you don't think about a night, you know, you just didn't think about stuff like that. But when he told me that was the last thing he remembered, I knew that I was actually talking to him, because there's no way Catherine could have known that. No way.
And what came through to me, and by the way, I was crying by the end of chapter two, because it was just to me like such a nice, wonderful person. You know, and as Jocelyn said, why wasn't it me? Because she's like more the bad guy. And even Kevin said, there's always a good cop and a bad cop, which I thought was funny. But his personality came so through. I imagine that you felt him so much, because like the words that were used in the reading, you could just see his personality through all those readings, which was, I thought, really A, powerful, and B, I'm not sure you'd ever want to not stop talking to him. I mean, that would be the danger is wanting to keep him in your life and like wanting Catherine to kind of like move in with you and kind of continue the readings. Yeah, you guys did a great job with the way it was written, the book.
Well, and also this book is really unique in that it's a four-part narrative, because Kevin really is, he's talking as he's in a coma, when he comes out of the coma, which Jocelyn can talk about in a minute, as he's dying and after his death. And so he really is the main character, only he's not some character created. He's himself. He's this, and you got it completely, Lori. He is this amazing man of faith, not afraid to die. And he's wholly committed to helping Jocelyn through this, because he knows she doesn't have faith, she's not ready. And so in that way, and then of course there's the God writings, as you'll see, you'll get more and more. And then Jocelyn and I both are providing information and commenting on what's going on, because there's six actual writings as they were done in the book, Kevin sharing his wisdom. And it's not talking to somebody who's had a near-death experience. Kevin's talking from having his own experience and sharing with Jocelyn post-death what that's like. So I don't know if that occurs in the last half of the book or, but he is, you know, he's so inspirational. So there's really yeah. going to be a zip at the end, which we won't share. We won't spoil that for you about okay. his dream come true or his, what he wanted for his life being realized in yeah, the writing.
And what was, I thought, such a gift that you gave both Gavin and Jocelyn is this ability to communicate, because I think if she hadn't had that, the whole process would have been more heart-wrenching and the conclusion might have been different because she would have made different decisions. And the ability that she was able to get by him talking to her through you was pretty incredible, I thought. And it's just, I just wish more people had you, Catherine, or had the ability, because as you say in the book, we all have that ability. We just not open right. to it. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think some people are kind of more naturally inclined. Do you want to talk a little bit about when you first started? I think the Ouija board experience was kind of cool. Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, I was in graduate school. That's the big cosmic joke, studying communication. When this gift emerged, and I thought I was kind of losing my mind. And I don't know if, I'm not quite sure, but it really came on in graduate school. And I was at a friend's house, and her sister had just moved here from New York. And one evening we were drinking wine, and not, you know, like a glass of wine. And so we're just having this conversation, and she says, "Hey, you want to play the Ouija board?" I'm like, "The Ouija board, really?" She goes, "Yeah, yeah. Remember as girls, you know, I mean, I was almost 30 at the time. My friend was 30. Her sister was in her 40s. So, you know, what do you say? This is for middle age. We weren't really middle aged. I don't know if the one reaching 40 in her 40s counted, but and so she says, "Sure, whatever, you know, we're just joking around." And so she cut up little letters on yellow legal paper and got out her mom's little occasional table and a juice glass and turned it upside down. But not a whole lot, you know, happened. It just kind of moved slow. And then we did it again and it moved really fast. And I told a colleague of mine in my graduate program, I said, "You know, it's a really funny thing we did. It's really funny, you know, just..." And she goes, "I want to see that. What is that?" So we were being trained to be good social science researchers. And anyway, we were bored out of our minds. And so my friend came over and we did it, and it was moving. It started moving so fast that you'd have to like write down the letters and then break them out like a puzzle, like a word puzzle, because it was so fast. And so my friend just looked at me, my grad friend, and she's like, "Catherine, why are you putting everyone through this?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "It only moves when your finger's on the glass." I'm like, "Eh, no, you know, whatever." She goes, "Yeah." She goes, "Just write it down." And she hands me this yellow legal pad. And I'm like, "No, no, no." Well, it ended up that it actually was like that. And in the beginning, there were short cryptic messages, but very, and we only did the Ouija board maybe 3 or 4 times total, and then just stopped doing it. You know, it was like, not like we're seance or whatever.
Well, and, it was like you created your own Ouija board though. You kind of made it up like it was.
Yeah, she just cut up some letters and put A, B, C, D, you know, whatever. And
and it's funny because you had said, like, when I was young, same thing with you is you were told, "Oh, that's like, you don't use
like
that.
The devil's like the,
yeah, bad things are going to happen to you."
And so what did I think? I thought, okay, when all this weird stuff started happening where I'd be in a place and it'd be like, say a message, say this to a stranger, I'd be like, "Oh my God." It's like, I flashback to that 13-year-old, "Oh, you know, everybody said, you know." So I was, but it would be like, say it. I'd go up to a stranger in a restaurant. I'd say, "Excuse me," and normal, you know, thank God I'm Midwestern. I look threatening or weird in any way. I said, "Excuse me, sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to say something to you. And they'd be like, yes, you know, and I'd go like, blue car under the trundle bed. And the person would like start crying and having a release. And the person that was eating with them would look at me and look at them like, what the heck's going on? And I'd be so humiliated. I'd be like, okay, bye. I'd just be like, what is this? And so, and those messages got more. I thought, I was really frightened. I thought, oh my goodness. But my friend's mother said, Catherine, that's gift of the spirit. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, I was raised Catholic, but we never talked about that. And so I was really disturbed, but I was smart enough to know I couldn't be so high performing, top of my grad class, and also finding complete strangers I didn't know to collude with me in my insanity. So anyway, I said, well, whatever. And she introduced me to these two priests, Fathers Ed and Pete. They were both psychologists. And she said, oh, Fathers Ed and Pete will talk to you. So I'm like, great. You know, maybe they'll do an exorcism. I don't know. I mean, pray this is not okay. And they asked me some questions and how did people respond? And I said, oh, they understood. And they said, well, I'm like, how do you know this isn't? And they too said, this is gifts of the spirit. And if you see something bad come from it, you know it's not good and you should stop. And I was like, I didn't even start it. I don't even know what's going on. And you judge it by the fruits. And if it helps people, you know it's from God. So that's been 30 years ago and thousands of experiences. And it's always helpful and healing for people. So I feel grateful for the gift.
Yeah, definitely. So Jocelyn, how did that experience change you in terms of like your beliefs? And I mean, you know, that was a while ago. How have you reflected on this? Have you continued to do readings?
Well, in the book, there's the first six, and I think altogether we've had 52. So a lot, although I haven't done one in a while. And I mean, it's changed me profoundly and on every level. Obviously, the main one is I believe in a way that I didn't before about a higher power, a life after this life. I've learned a lot about, you know, what really matters, what's important, what isn't important. And I can only speak about how the experience has affected me. And I'm waiting for, you know, Catherine's, I brought a Zoom so I can see her face, but I used to be a lot more controlling, I guess is the word, than I am now. Catherine, she's like rolling on the floor, but I'm actually a lot more easygoing than I was before.
Or at least aware of it, right?
Well, Catherine didn't know me then, so it's hard for her to have a comparison, but apparently I was much more high strung than I am now because I just, things that mattered to me before don't. And I don't sweat the small stuff. And I don't even sweat a lot of the big stuff because I know that everything is, at least for me, okay. You know, I've had so many conversations with Kevin after he's been gone. And I know the main thing I was always worried about through all of this was, am I going to be with you again? And I know that we get to be together again. And he said that my time here is going to be like not a blink of an eye has passed. And so that's made me do two things. One, not sweat the small stuff, like I said. And two, just to be like, or try to be, I mean, I fail often, of course, just extra kind and extra loving and extra giving. Because if it is a blink in an eye, you know, what's the downside to passing as much love and joy and goodness as I can while I'm here? And so
less, you know, afraid of death, probably.
Well, you know? And that's, of course, and that's the huge thing. And, you know, it's funny, I didn't even think to say that, but I don't fear death at all. And that, I mean, of course, I don't want it to hurt. You know, my mom just died less than a year ago at the same hospice facility that Kevin did. And I stayed with her there just like I did with him. And it took longer with her, but it was such a completely different experience because I wasn't worried about her dying at all. I just said, you know, I'm not worried about you dying. And she didn't have any religious beliefs at all. And I said, I'm not worried about where you're going. I know it's all going to be good. My job is just to make sure you're not in pain until you get there. And, you know, it wasn't a stressful, I mean, it was stressful because it's my mother. And of course I love her, but she was 91. She had a good run. And I just wanted to make sure she was as comfortable as she could at the end, but I wasn't worried about where she was going. And not being worried about what waits for you after makes just this life so much better because it's not like you have to get everything in, you know, because there's more, you know. And it does matter what you do because there is more, you know, it all matters. So, and I never thought about that. I was just such an in the moment kind of a person.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is the other thing is a big part of the book is that our loved ones are still with us. And so Jocelyn knows that Kevin is watching her and her children and present and looking out, which a lot of times I think when we lose someone, we just thought, where are they gone? They're gone into the void. I can't reach them. I can't connect with them. And after he died, Kevin shared a lot with Jocelyn, again, Jocelyn, the skeptic lawyer, about things that were only she would know in terms of, you know, things that were going on with their children. You want to tell the guitar story, Jocelyn?
Even when they're gone, I wanted to say this earlier when Catherine was talking about how the writings work for her. You know, when she's saying the information she's getting downloaded is the way she puts it, she has the same intonation and everything. So she would, of course, use the same words Kevin would use because that's the information she's receiving. But the way she uses her inflection in her voice, it sounds just like him, like a female him. Like I could just picture it in my head. And a lot of the writings are recorded. So you can, when we're having these back and forth conversations as they are, you can, when you hear her repeating it, it's funny. It's like, it's just him. And after he died, you know, we'd have these writings and just the details of the things he knew, like when my son Will, who was 13 when he died, decided to pick up the guitar. I made him start taking piano lessons when he was in kindergarten. And when he was a teenager, he said, you know, I think I'd like to play the guitar, which Kevin always loved. And so I got him a small Martin guitar, which is a really great guitar brand because Kevin loved Martin guitars. And the next writing we had, he commented how unsolicited, and Catherine didn't know this, that he was so happy that Will had picked up the guitar and that he was really happy that I'd spent the extra money and gotten this Martin guitar because, you know, having a good quality instrument just made learning it so much more fun. And so just, you know, really specific things like that, that let me know that he's just, you know, kind of participating. And, you know, he does send me signs all the time. And you probably haven't gotten this far in the book, but there's a writing in there on my birthday and he sent this unsolicited writing, which he does. And in it, he said he was going to send me a sign. And so he did, he sent me a sign in the form of a squirrel and you'll have to read about it in the book. But since then, I've gotten tons and tons of signs from him. And Catherine talks about them. She calls them divine interventions.
Divine intervention.
Got it wrong. Meeting you is a divine intervention. But is divine synchronicity. Aha. But like things like, you know, I'm in my car and I turn on the radio and the song is Brown Eyed Girl, which is a Van Morrison song, which he always attributed to me. Or like once after he died, we listened to a James Taylor CD on the way down to UCLA. And after he died, I put it in and the same CD and our favorite song came on, Something in the Way She Moves. And it made me cry. So I turned it off and I, you know, tried to skip the song and it went back to that same song. And then I tried to skip it again. It went back. And so I took the CD out. I put the CD back in and I turned it on. It should go to song one, but no, it goes back to that song. Like the whole drive, I couldn't get the song, you know, to not play. And I've had lots of those kinds of synchronicities and other people have them too. And so Catherine, you should speak to that because it's a kind of a big part of this message.
Well, and that's what, you know, we're hoping, or I'm hoping from the book too, is that people realize that their loved ones are reaching out to them. And since the book's come out, we've had so many people telling us, oh, I had this experience with my grandmother, or I, you know, this happened, and where you feel the person's with you, or you see something that reminds you of them or is associated with them, and could be a penny, it could be a certain kind of bird, all different kinds of things. My friend's mom and dad, father died and a phone rang in their house. It wasn't even hooked up. They didn't even have a line to, you know, they had let their phone line. So all these weird things. And people, our tendency is to go like I did when all this strange stuff started happening, like, I must be losing my mind, or that's just a coincidence. And what I want to encourage readers to know, and people in general, whoever's listening, is that our loved ones, of course, are trying to still send us messages and love us from a distance. And if you think you feel them, or you smell your grandmother's perfume and you're like, just allow yourself to have that connection. Allow yourself to, you know, it doesn't mean you're crazy. You don't have to tell people, but receive that, because of course that love, the love we share with our loved ones, it is not extinguished at death. It just isn't. And also, and then people say, well, why haven't I felt my sister since she died? Because sometimes we're so bubble wrapped in our grief, we can't feel, you know, we're just so wounded and protected and totally understandable. So I just always talk about, we're always connected through the portals of our hearts, and to not grasp for connection, but just hold the soft gaze, be the open palm. And if something falls in, say, well, thank you. And when you talk to your loved ones who are passed, they hear you. When you talk to people in comas, they hear you. And I've done hundreds of these, and I know, just like with Beyond Ever After and that story, that, you know, they recount things that were said supposedly while they're in a coma. So when you're saying your goodbyes and you're telling someone you love them, and they look, they're unconscious, and you don't know if they hear you, they hear you. So
yeah, one thing, and I'd mentioned in the pre-interview when I had read this book that first got me really fascinated about a year and a half ago, about, it's called Journey of Souls. And one thing that really, and it comes through in the book with Kevin too, is that they don't want us to be in pain. Mm-hmm. They don't want, they feel so bad if, you know, can really, they, you know, they don't feel sad, mm-hmm. but they see sadness in us as human beings, because human beings have sadness. And so I think some of the communication, or a lot of it, is just they're trying to help us. They're trying
of
to,
of course, us, like they would
want
in
us
life.
To know it's okay.
You know, I love, Lori, that you said to Jocelyn, kind of, can you imagine if this hadn't have happened? And knowing Jocelyn, I was like, she would still be so angry. You would be so immobilized, and just, I mean, it could have been so, so bad, because Jocelyn, you know, and that, I never really thought about that, of what it might have been. And surely, back to our story, is that in a writing, so Kevin on that first phone call began to rouse himself out of a coma he'd been in for 26 days. And so,
yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah. What I thought was really incredible, and it was explained really well, is that you didn't know she was in a hotel room talking to you. You thought, Catherine thought, that Jocelyn was in Kevin's hospital room, but she had left the hospital room and left her sister with Kevin while she went and took the call, and it was late at night. And then Kevin had the idea of doing an experiment, and he said he smelled her sister's perfume. That's how Kevin knew she was in the room. And you didn't know until he said that through you, that she was in fact not in the hospital room with Kevin, that Jocelyn.
I never picked up on that before. I know that. And I know her sister said, her sister's so methodical. She's like, I don't wear perfume. I'm like, well, maybe it was hand lotion. I don't know.
He picked up somebody that was in the room different than.
Right. Yeah. No, no, no.
Or her smell.
And it could have been. I didn't know. Yeah.
My husband doesn't wear cologne, and my husband doesn't wear cologne, but he has a distinct smell. His clothes is like, ever since we dated in college and we rekindled many, many years later, I remember that smell, and it was like, oh my gosh, it's that smell. So her sister has a smell.
Yeah. Well,
he tapped. He did this thing where, and he was not doing anything like that. And so he wanted to do this experiment, and she was relaying back, because what in the book, Jocelyn said she's on a landline with Catherine, and she gets on her cell phone to talk to her sister and to do this experiment that Kevin wanted to do. And you think if this is kind of like just not true and not really coming from Kevin, that the person probably wouldn't do an experiment if this was all like a ruse, because that could go really badly, you know, if it was like, if you're trying to fake it out. But no, it was like really coming through Kevin. And then he starts tapping his fingers, and Jocelyn's like, oh my gosh, he's tapping. And he initiated it too. So it was very, very fascinating.
Yeah. Well, you're in for some more excitement. Keep reading.
Plus thumbing through it, I saw that he wrote her a love story, and yeah. And that you got this download on the day he was going to be taken out of the hospital and go home.
Well, no, I just get these God nudges. Okay. I call them God nudges, where I'm just like, okay. And I knew, you know, and I was like, oh boy. Okay. So I called her. I called her up and I said, you know, I think he was supposed to be coming home, and she was going to take him home like most people and take care of him and love him up until his death. And then I got this message, like, go down there. And I was like, oh no, because Jocelyn's a pretty, you read the book, she's pretty strong-willed force of nature. And so I didn't really want to call her and say that. So I called her sister, and I was recovering from a detached retina and I wasn't driving. And her sister said, I can take you down there, you know. And so I told Jocelyn, she's like, no, no, you don't need to come. You don't need to come. You can come. I'm bringing him home tomorrow. This can wait. And maybe you want to talk about that, Jocelyn, just briefly, what happened.
Well, she called me the day before we had the first writing, and then Kevin started to wake up.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting too, because yeah. I thought Catherine had said he never woke up. And I was like, yeah, he did kind of try.
Well, he woke up, he talked, he said all kinds of things. And then he went to rehab, and then he got worse again. And
the cancer. It was,
you know, the cancer came back. I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but it had come back.
But he couldn't, what was it? You know, if you read the book, he couldn't have treatment because of the coma. So of course the cancer was growing more rapidly than, right? He could have.
They wanted to start him on chemotherapy, and I wanted to do it, but they wanted him to not be in a coma when they were giving him chemotherapy. So it never really got started. Yeah. But, you know, it really wouldn't have helped. I mean, even when they did the surgery that all went downhill, it was at the most, they thought maybe he had a year, you know. So the fact that he only ended up having a couple months. I mean, glioblastoma is really aggressive. It's the most aggressive form of brain cancer that there is. And so it was a losing battle really to start with. We just wanted to have as much time together as, you know, we could at the end.
And he was 56 when he was diagnosed, I think I remember.
He was 56 when he was first diagnosed and 59 when he died. If he lived 21 more days, he would have been 60. I think about that all the time. When his birthday rolls around.
Yeah. So I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead and finish the story about when you were going to move him.
Well, I was going to be coming home. I mean, he was basically back to being in a coma. They said, there's nothing we can do. Send him to a skilled nursing facility. And I said, no way, you know, we're just going to go home. And my sister had gotten a hospital bed. We hired caregivers and all that kind of stuff, rehab people. And we, the day before we were supposed to bring him home, Catherine calls me and she said, you know, I'm just getting this like nudge that I need to come down and do another writing. And I was like, look, we're going to be home tomorrow. I would love to talk to him again, but you don't need to come down and do that. And she goes, no, no, I really want to come. And I was like, no, no, you really don't need to. And she pressed, and she is not normally pushy about stuff like this. I mean, she can be pushy about other things like we all can, but not about stuff like this. She's not. She offers her gift. If somebody wants to take it, great. If they don't, she has no personal agenda with any of this. She's never pushy, but she pressed a little bit. And I didn't know that at the time that she wasn't pushy. And since I'm pushy, you know, it seems pretty normal to me. But so she said, I really feel like I need to come, and your sister can drive me down. I was like, okay, come. I didn't really want her to come. But I was worried, because if she felt like there was something I needed to hear, it probably couldn't be good if it couldn't wait a day, you know. And I was already worried about what was going on. And it's just like, you know, I didn't think her coming down was to bring me good news. it didn't seem like that's what was going to be happening, you know. So she came down and and Kevin was in a coma, you know, one eye is sewn shut. He just looks like death warmed over. I look at the pictures back then. I just can't believe how in denial I was. I mean, he was really more dead than alive by then, you know, anyway. But she came down and we did another writing and he basically said, look, I'm dying. Don't take me home. You know, I want to go to hospice. I don't want to go home. And I didn't want to do that, but I ultimately relented because, you know, that's what he wanted, but I didn't want to do it.
And even then he said, you know, I don't want our home. I don't want our home where the children are. I want them to have the good memories in our house. You yeah. know, he
not
he
center was, for the dying. That's what he
yeah,
said.
Yeah. He was very, and he was trying to convince her he was dying. Like she said, she was it. I mean, she knew at some level, but she was holding all hope. This is a woman who could probably move mountains on her back if she wanted to. So this is like the crucible of hell for her to not be able to will this away, like for all of us when we're losing someone we love. She didn't want to change her plan. And he wanted, in his divine knowing, he wanted it to be easier for her and easier for her family. And it probably would have been really hard, Jocelyn, had he died in your house, because you're still in the house. You would have probably had to like move and get the heck.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been mm-hmm. terrible.
I know. And you know, it was having, I mean, I had been, when my father died, I was there for kind of his last breath, but to go through like the last week, when someone's just actively dying, which is such an oxymoron, but that's what they call it. It's brutal. I mean, there's no way I would have wanted to do that at home. It was awful. And, you know, at a hospice facility, they come in all the time if you need them and they keep upping the morphine essentially so that they're not suffering at all. And you're not suffering watching them suffer. That's a lot of what they do is to make it so that it's just not this horrendously horrible suffering filled event for everybody. So I'm really glad that we did. I'm really glad I did that because I wouldn't have lasted at home with him. It would have been so much worse.
And then in the book, there's also a hospice writing where I get, again, another nudge to come to hospice. And so I go and Kevin says his last goodbye to his children. I don't know if you're at that part yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Get a big box of tissue, sister.
Well, it's funny because I was just going to ask you about how this has affected your kids, because losing a father, of course, is one of the worst things, especially at a young age. Your younger son was young, but to know at the same time that he's still in spirit there and did they actually do any kind of communicating with him through the readings?
Well, there's a hospice writing, as Catherine just said, and that one, it was really his kind of last goodbye to the kids. And they talked to him during that. And one of my kids did the same thing that I did and asked him a test question, didn't really believe that it was him. And he, of course, answered correctly. and they were, you know, when it was done, that writing, they were all just kind of stunned. But since then, none of them have had another one, and they haven't wanted to. And I've offered for them to do it, and they, especially my youngest one, Will, he feels like the natural order of things is, you know, when someone's gone, they're gone. They're not available to you. And it's kind of unfair / cheating, you know, that I get this opportunity. And I said, well, I look at it as more of like a blessing. And why me? And why me? Because I'm nothing special. I think I'm a pretty good person. I'm better now than I used to be, but I'm not necessarily the nicest of people. And Catherine is giggling. I can see her face over there. But no, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm good sometimes. I'm not good others. I try sometimes. I don't, you know, try others. But Kevin wasn't like that. You know, he was just a superstellar human being. And I just never understood why I got this opportunity. And part of it, I think, is I want to use it to share what I learned, because it was such a great opportunity in such a horrible experience that if I could help anyone who's gone through it to have it sting a little less and to kind of not fear death like I don't fear, and know what I know, that the people you love are still with you all the time, even if you can't see them. And the love that you have is still there, you know, and if you let yourself, you can feel it, you know?
Yeah, so, I think also that the people who are the non-believers are the ones who are selected to have the story, so they can be the communicators of the story once they're transformed. You know, it's very powerful when it comes from somebody like you who, like, thought this was all a bunch of hocus pocus. And, you know, you have your gifts of being able to communicate the story in such a great way. And unfortunately, you know, Kevin had to be the story that was told. But we all have a purpose. And, you know, he sounded like he lived a great life for the life he had. And his story is then shared so that others may learn from it. And that's what some people do. I was just reading a really sad story on Instagram, and this woman lost her 3-year-old daughter to a brain tumor. And she was just diagnosed like 6 weeks ago. Devastating. Yeah. And she's very open. She's been a blogger. My daughter told me about her because she's been a mommy blogger for years that she's followed. And it was just heart wrenching. And you just wonder, like, why her? I'm sure the mom and the father and the two boys that were her brothers are just all going through this. Like, how can somebody that so innocent be chosen? And like, Kevin was such a good soul, it sounded like. But there's a story to be told, and there's a purpose for their being. And you know, we just got to have faith that we'll know someday when we cross onto that other side.
Well, and those are the hardest, you know, when I work with parents who've lost children, those are the hardest. Those are ones you never quite get over. I mean, Jocelyn talks about it being a scar that never heals. But when you lose your child, it's like not the natural order of things, and so incredibly painful. But
yeah.
And you feel like you're being punished. You feel like you're being, like, you've done something wrong. Like, and it's not all about you. It's not like Marsha, 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 although, you know, I tend to be like that, but you do feel like that. Like, what have I done? Why am I being punished like this? Is it because I wasn't nice when I was this situation, or I didn't believe, or I didn't do this, or I didn't do that? You know, what did I do wrong? And it's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Put yourself through. It's just terrible.
Yeah. And for a long time, Jocelyn would say, God is killing Kevin. And I'm like, Jocelyn, everyone dies. She's like, no, he didn't have to kill Kevin. And then in all the writings after, you know, as we've had many, as she said, Kevin is still coaching Jocelyn through her grief, through things, co-parenting with her. And as you already know, Kevin is just this incredible man who lived a life of faith, of service, father, husband. I mean, what did he used to do? He used to take the seats out of your minivan and go pick up bread on what was that?
On Saturdays, he'd take all the seats out of my minivan. There's a shelter in town for families. Casa Esperanza was called, and he would go to Trader Joe's and Costco and pick up all the food they would donate on the, before I was even up for coffee, he'd go do that early, like 7, really early.
Yeah. In the book, you were talking about how he would always shake the hands of the homeless people. And you carried hand sanitizer, and you sound so much like me in the sense of, like, I'll donate to St. Jude's $100 every month, but I don't want to touch a homeless man's hand and, like, you know, thank it. I'm like, you know, get your shit together.
And he's like shaking, they clap him on the back. I'm like, and then he wanted to, I'm like, don't touch back. You know, and I'd have this hand sanitizer. You know, when this COVID thing started, I was so attuned to that. I had hand sanitizer everywhere. I was ready, you know.
But then I think about when I read that story, how powerful it was to me. And it made me think, like, what he said is, it's not real, kind of, when you just give money. It's like when you really go, give all of yourself, and you go and you actually participate in the making the food and the really helping people and just giving the gift of a touch, a human touch to somebody. And it's almost like Kevin isn't just helping one person, because he's not even doing that because he's not here anymore. But through his story having that impact on me and then other people who read his story, it's going to create more action in that way by that. And that to me was like, yeah, that's the gift to Kevin, is by Kevin and sharing a story, is that spreads.
Well, and that's the whole idea too, is that he's touched so many more lives than Kevin, the man in his life, could have touched. And our readers respond in that way. And Kevin really wasn't afraid of dying. And as you read through the book, you're going to see, and our readers say, I used to be afraid of dying. And they read the book and they're like, I'm not afraid to die anymore.
And yes, and I think it should be a gift for anybody who is going through some sort of tragedy of either their loved one is dying or they're burying somebody they love. I think it can help that transition period. Right. Because once I read that other book and then I've become so fascinated with this, and now your book, I'm so excited to finish it and share it with other people. It's super powerful.
And that's the sad part of, you know, COVID and what's happening, is all of those ways in which we honored our dead and we buried them and we celebrated them, we can't do right now. You know, you can't go to the hospital and visit them. I mean, they're loosening up a bit, but I'm a prayer chaplain, just did a first online virtual celebration of life. And it was wonderful, but we need all those things too, to honor and to go through and be held and comforted. And the fact that, I mean, I don't know if you've gotten to the part in the book where Jocelyn's like, what'd you leave on your, she wouldn't have been comforted. I don't believe Jocelyn could have been comforted by anyone but Kevin himself. Don't you think that's true, Jocelyn?
Absolutely.
Because tell him what you left on your answering machine after he died.
Well,
or voicemail or whatever.
You have a voicemail and everybody, you know, were calling me or texting me to tell me how sorry they were. And people kept saying, I got several times this, you know, I know this is hard, but you know, God just needed another angel. And that's why, you know, Kevin's gone. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Is that what you really think? Is that what you, all the billions of years, he doesn't have enough people up there, he needs one more, and that's why Kevin, I mean, you're a lawyer, you're telling me this crock of, you know what, you know? And so I changed my voicemail to say, hello, this is Jocelyn, you could leave me a message, but I probably won't call you back, click. And I didn't want to talk to anybody. And because you know what? There's nothing anybody can say. And they say all the wrong things. And, you know, what they really need to say is, Kevin was a great guy. I loved him too. And just, you know, but not this try to make it better. Because unless they've really walked in your shoes, and no one ever can, they don't know.
Yeah. And everybody's experience is going to be different, unique to them. Right. And so I think people say and express what they'd want. And it's totally off base when the receiver isn't like them and doesn't have their perspectives. But anyways, I have a personal question, and I'm thinking about my listeners. A lot of them are older, have aging parents who are in assisted living or, you know, suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's and that sort of thing. My mother just turned 84, and my father died suddenly in 2007 from a brain aneurysm. He was just like fine one minute, dropped dead the next minute. And so there was not very much closure, which, I mean, I'm happy for my dad because he would have never been a good sick guy. And he was 72. My mom was 70. And basically when he died, lights went out. I mean, she went from being fine to like disconnecting with the world. And she stayed in their house for like a year and then decided to come move to Northern Virginia. She was in Florida, where my sister and I live. And she started drinking. I mean, she had a drinking problem to begin with, social drinking, but it got to the point where she wasn't eating. She was just drinking. And long story short, she fell, broke both hips, ended up in a wheelchair. So she now lives in assisted living, but she doesn't know what really, I guess what's really frustrating for me as her daughter is that she never, it was like she died when my dad died, and she didn't have any reason for continuing. Like, she has two great daughters, four great grandchildren, and grandchildren, great-grandchildren now, and just doesn't want to talk to anybody or carry on a conversation. And so do you communicate with people that are in this kind of disconnected state, or do they have to be more?
I mean, that I have done that. Sure. People who, I'm reminded of someone, and their dad said, I walk, you know? And so she was talking to him through what I do. But what was more stunning about that writing is in the God introduction, it talked about, and he had dementia. And indeed, she said, he was in an assisted facility somewhere. He got up every morning, they dressed him, and he walked the entire day. Like, they could barely get him to sit down to eat. He walked. I mean, but what was so interesting about that is what God was saying about dementia and the process of dementia and Alzheimer's, where it's like a series of funnels that get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller about what they can communicate and what they can perceive. So yeah, that surely is possible. You know,
I feel like if she could just, I feel like if my dad was here, he'd be like, what the F are you doing? Get up come on. You got a family here and they love you and all that kind of stuff. And,
I just think that the death of the pain of death and how close, that's not an unusual story in that one partner dies and the other one dies shortly after and they were perfectly healthy or deteriorates in that way. Or the caregiver of the person who has dementia ends up dying before their person who had dementia. And I don't know. I mean, heartbreak is heartbreak. And
yeah, I mean, I feel like, and both my parents were, I think they called themselves atheists, but really, really agnostic. They just didn't practice. They didn't believe. And so my mother, I feel, is hanging on because this is it. This is it. She sees nothing. She doesn't think she's going to see my dad again. And she's hanging on to this, what I think is a living hell.
Right.
Like she wears diapers. She's in a wheelchair and nobody, my sister stopped talking to her because she doesn't talk back. Yeah. And it's, you know, and I just.
And I would encourage even in those states that your love still gets through, and though they're like a coma person, unable to respond, that doesn't mean that they aren't sensing that somewhere inside that's not getting through. And I mean, it's really, really painful. And also, again, going back to this idea, the portal of your heart, which isn't talked about in the book, which is this whole other thing, but is that when we can send our love, we can send our caring, we can reach out. And that, though, I mean, we're so used to, we live in this society where it's like achievement, feedback, success, it's either working, it's not working. You know, we chop and dice reality up really quick. And now we're all like on stall and people are losing their minds because, you know, I got my ginsu knife, I got my cutting board, and why, you know, what am I going to do here? I can't make. And so I know that from what I'm able to facilitate, that this reality is not as linear. It isn't that way. And that feedback loop shouldn't be the only thing that says I'm reaching you, or that I care, or that
I love that. I love that. It makes me feel I don't have to be there in person, that I can just like open my heart and be present in that moment. Just, you know, be quiet and then kind of open that portal to my heart. That really helped me a lot.
So, I mean, and in this time when we're in California, Jocelyn and I are we're stay-at-home girls. We're just the masks. We're not going out, whatever, walking only in the neighborhood. She's hiking in the mountains. But anyway, and we're seeing that. We're seeing that in our isolation, that we can still feel connected, reach forward, and be in contact with those we love. Now, I'd never advocate just, you know, I don't have to call or I don't have to show up, but we need to know that there's so much, our heart can move so much further. Heart math, this heart coherence, we're so much larger than we think. And all that loving, just like with death, it continues. It's still alive and in life. So yeah
I need to use those gifts of my that I have that, you know, are untapped.
But and it kind of goes back to that other thing. We just think we can't, or we're crazy, or that's nuts, or whatever. And it's not like you have to put a billboard. I mean, of course, you know me, I'm kind of hanging, flying the flag out there. It's a little scary. And by the way, don't email us and say, can I have a session? Because I'm not doing that. So,
well, I was going to ask you, because I would think
you're firm. We do these interviews, yeah, and then people are like, please. And I'm like. Yeah.
So tell me what you do. You ever do sessions? You clearly connected.
No, I do. I'm just right now we're launching the book, and we are also, you know, I'm staying in my house and I'm busy on other projects. And yeah.
Yeah. And especially so, if you're doing these channeling one-on-one type of thing, you
yeah,
totally
and
spread yourself.
I, as you know, I don't call it channeling because it's all like woo woo-y. I call myself a communication facilitator. And when I say he's talking, or I'm hearing, or he's saying, it's I'm receiving the energy and I'm turning it into prose. So it's not like I'm just a stenographer, the scribe just taking it down. And people are like, you automatically write. And I'm like, no. I mean, I'm completely, it's just like we're having this conversation. But
yeah. That's great. So let's wrap up. And
sure.
It's been amazing. I'm so excited. And I want to know where they can get a book, of course. And I want you each to leave kind of just your last words on like what is important for my listeners who always are, you know, they're people at middle age looking for inspiration. And I like this episode in particular because I think it's going to open doors of perspective that people might not have had. So just tell me where the book they can get it. And then last words with Catherine starting and then Jocelyn.
Go ahead, Jocelyn. Well, you can get our book, our new website. We have a website. Our new one's coming up really soon. But you can get it through our website, beyondeverafter.com, beyondeverafter.com. It's also on Amazon, Beyond Ever After, as an ebook or a book. And there's a link on our website. We also on our website have the opportunity for people to share their stories because people are all having these experiences. And so this is the opportunity for them to share that too.
I love that.
Publicize it, or we're not going to steal your story or put it out there without your permission.
You should do a podcast. Have you thought about doing a podcast?
Yeah, we could. Yeah. So, but, and closing thoughts, I mean, I would say this world and this universe, this love force that we're all created by and for is so much bigger than what we think. It is not just limited to this table and that door, that our love and our loved ones extend and radiate out, whether it's with your mom, who seems unreachable, that your love does penetrate her, is felt and is knowing that ripple of love, it can get around a mind that ceased to function. It can get around a body and a life that is supposedly dead, but is alive in spirit. And love and connection are superpowers. And we are vested with them, and to hold things gently, to look at the peripheral, to hold the soft gaze. And if we feel our loved ones with us, don't say, I'm just imagining that. Say, wow, thank you. I feel that. And if you're at home on your own, alone, and you're missing someone that's gone before you, or even a pet, you can talk to them, you can feel them, and that doesn't make you crazy. That just says, my love is more powerful than death or distance or time, and it's all real.
Yeah, it's funny you should bring up pets, because my last episode, I talked to a pet loss grief expert, and she communicates with pets after they've died. So it's like, I don't know, it's just all this woo-woo stuff.
I know.
Okay, Jocelyn. And after Jocelyn finishes, I'm going to read a little thing that struck me as I was reading the book. Perfect. I felt really cool. So
thank you.
All right.
I can't possibly top what Catherine said. You should always wrap up with her. She's much better at all this than I am. But I would just tell your listeners that death isn't a failure and it's not a punishment, and that the people we love who have gone before us are still with us all the time. And they're sending us signs and they're sending us messages, whether we are open to receiving them or not, they're still doing it. And the love that they had for us is still there, and it's still very real. It's still a reality and not virtual like everything else is these COVID days. And I guess, you know, that would be it. Catherine really said it all. So,
yeah. And so as I was going through this story, and this was early on, it was, well, chapter 11, it struck me, and it was going through the, I guess, after the first writing, but it was kind of Catherine's explanation. And this is what struck me so much. She said, in his, Kevin's, so-called unconsciousness, Kevin was more soul conscious than most of us. Specifically, it is through our soul that intuition arises. Birthrights give us a body, whereas soul rights give us access to this place of inner contact with ourselves and the innate wisdom we all possess. And I thought that just really struck me, that here he was unconscious, yet soul conscious. Mm-hmm. His soul was there, and it, and you brought it alive, and I just, it's great.
You're going to love the rest of the book, girl.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share Kevin's and Jocelyn's story. And I'm so thankful you wrote the book, and I'm going to share it with as many people as I can and talk about it as much as I can, because I just think it's going to help so many people just open their minds and their hearts, and yeah, it'll help people, sure. I think. All right.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average life.